5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
We're going to cause trouble.
Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline.
We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings.
It's Farrell on the bench.
I believe in whipped cream with everything.
We're back. I think the Bengals just got a huge first down here. This is going to be measured. 3 minutes and 45 seconds and counting on my stream. They went with was that a QB sneak there? Yeah, Ryan Finley with the QB sneak. They are approaching midfield. They're on their own 40-yard line. It was a big third and one play. We'll see where the measurement shakes out there, but yeah, they got it first down. So 3.5 minutes left. You can't spot teams 17 points. I don't care how bad they are. This happened to the Rams yesterday, and it's happening to the Steelers right now. They are in big trouble at the moment, as the Bengals, I think, are just sort of, I mean, they're going to have to throw the ball here. Steelers have three timeouts. So, Mafia, I got to bring you in here, man. I got to bring you in because I'm freaking out a little bit. I've been good with the Steelers' two-game losing streak, but losing to the Bengals in this scenario is going to be devastating emotionally for me, for Scott, for Steelers fans. This is not the team that you can lose to in this scenario. I get that things aren't going well, but this is a new level.
Yeah, you're just talking to Randy Cardoon about, you know, LA and the Rams. Like, can you really take them seriously if they blow a 17-point, you know, favorite coming into against the Jets and they just get outworked by the Jets from the get-go? I mean, the Steelers were almost that much of a favorite tonight against the Bengals playing their third-string quarterback. And, you know, before the game, we were playing earlier on Coast to Coast with Keith, Big Ben, saying, you know, it's not time to panic now. Like, we still have three games to work it out. We know we have issues, but we got to fix it. We got these three games to work it out and get better and get ready for the playoffs. We're already ready for the, you know, we're in the playoffs. We just got to fix ourselves. Well, this was the game to get better. This is the game to fix stuff against a terrible Bengals team playing their third-string quarterback. And instead, you're going to lose the game to go three in a row down. It might be start to panic now.
I don't really know what else to say. They're just running Ryan Finley. They're right, using these quarterbacks.
The turnovers are terrible.
Agreed. You're not going to win the percentage of games that you can win in the NFL. As I just lost power on my stream, it's probably a good thing. So Mafia's going to have to update you. But the percentage of games that you can win minus three turnovers is minuscule. It's just not a situation where you're going to win a lot of games. So bad times in Steelerville. 11-0 to 11-3 wouldn't be the end of the world if it wasn't a bad Bengals team. The Washington game was obviously the sign of when things really started to turn. But in that game, I thought Washington played a really good second half. It wasn't like an embarrassing loss. They lost by one score to a team that outplayed them in the second half. The Bills really thoroughly outplayed them in the third quarter. That Ben pick six was the catalyst in that game, but the Bills thoroughly outplayed them in the third quarter of that game. Steelers clawed their way back into it. It's a one-score game at one point, and then the Bills were better in general. As we welcome in our radio audience, Mike Blewett filling in for Scott. Around the country, around the globe, thank you for listening to 1090, the Mightier, and everywhere else around the country. We appreciate it. So Steelers in the hole right now. But I did not expect this at all. We talked on shows yesterday on the grid about how this could be a get-right spot for the Steelers. They played badly for weeks, and they're playing a downtrodden Bengals team. How could the Bengals possibly step up and stop them? But it's the same old, same old. Steelers with the dink and dunk passing offense. Now they started with the sloppy turnovers. The first half was the worst first half of football they played all year, maybe in years. And they had some rough outings last year, let's be honest, when Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph were in there. They couldn't score 10 points to save themselves. But nonetheless, that's where we're at. Mafia, what's the update here? I lost power on my stream. I'm struggling. The Steelers are losing. I got no power on my stream. What's the story? Where are we at? Let the people know.
They have the ball back. Steelers have the ball back. It was around there 15, I believe. It was just over 2 minutes. We're at 209 on 2nd and 10 here. They still have one timeout left after a reception by Juju. So we'll see. Yeah. I'm sorry, after a missed reception. They threw it to him, but he's only got three receptions on the six targets tonight. And, of course, that big fumble. So right now they're sitting at their 24.
This is brutal. This is brutal. I don't really know what the point of utilizing Juju like that is. I don't understand it. There's an assumption that he's only a close to the line of scrimmage guy. Let Deontay Johnson be that guy. They're not letting Juju break big plays out of those formations and on those catches anymore. He is the type of guy that can catch the ball downfield. He's had 1,000-yard seasons. He was a record-setting, like the youngest receiver to all of these milestones. I don't know what it is, but they only utilize him in that role. There's been a lot of talk since before the season that this is going to be his last in Pittsburgh. And frankly, I don't get it. So we'll come back after the break. We'll update you on where we're at in the Steelers game, whether or not they can pull off the comeback to tie it or go ahead and win this game. We're going to have Joe Lisi, my partner on college football, on a little bit later this hour. So excited to be here with you, filling in for Scott on the grid. It's Mike Blewett on the bench, coming off the bench for On the Bench.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're everywhere. Radio, the internet, TV, satellite, and our mobile app. We make it easy. Like real easy. In fact, if you're not listening,
it's you.
It's always you.
Slacker.
We are the Sports Grid Radio Network.
crucial play here for the Steelers. 4th and 10 right now. I'm watching along with you folks to see what they can pull off here. 4th and 10. Ben hit as he throws, overthrown. That's probably going to be the ball game. They're deep in Steelers territory. The Steelers only have one timeout left, so they'll be able to kick a field goal, even if they don't get a first down here. So, yeah, that's rough. I mean, 11-0 to 11-3, and dropping games to Washington and the Bengals along the way is pretty embarrassing. That was you can't spot teams like that. It was something I was going to say to Randy Cardoon when he was on with us earlier, and we thank you to Randy for being on with us, that there's an old line in sports that we talk about when things like this happen and what happened with the Jets. The other guys get paid too. They're not out there to lose. They're not going winless. We have this scenario a lot of times as fans, especially in the NFL. I feel like a lot of fans do this, where you start looking ahead at the schedule and you just start ticking off wins or losses for the bad teams or the good teams and bad teams respectively. That doesn't happen. The Jets beat the Rams. The Bengals beat the Steelers. Weird stuff like this happens all the time. I'm a Steelers fan. At no point did I think they were going 16-0. At no point did I think they were better than the Chiefs, despite the fact that they were unbeaten. And I think that was the reason that they weren't being talked about in lofty terms. Now all the haters are saying, I told you so. I told you weren't that good. The team has changed. The team has changed over the last month. They've gotten injuries, and the offense has slowed down to a stall in a lot of these games. And tonight they just couldn't stop turning the ball over in the first half, which is another new issue that they have to deal with. So another negative. But on the flip side, people just started ticking off wins. Like, oh, the Steelers will beat this team. They'll beat this team. They'll beat this team. The Chiefs are going to beat everybody on the rest of their schedule. Now, the Chiefs actually might, but we've seen what's happened with them the last 6 weeks. It's the first time in NFL history that a team has won that many games in a row with that close of a margin. So they are surviving by the skin of their teeth. They are the best team, and they're the ones to beat. And I'm holding Chiefs championship futures that I think will cash, but they can't keep playing games close like that, even in January, and expect to win all of them. They're going to have to start stepping on people and beating teams like the Panthers by more than 2 points, or the Saints are a different story. But we've seen the Chiefs have some close calls lately, including against the Raiders as well. So, wanted to go back to some of the games from yesterday. We had a really interesting battle. Two former Oklahoma quarterbacks, and Jalen Hurts and Kyler Murray, faced off. I believe we have some sound here on Kyler Murray.
Yeah, didn't dwell over, you know, the mistakes or, you know, not converting offensively, or, you know, obviously, you know, defense as well doing their thing. But we just stuck it out. Stayed down, and kept fighting. I mean, obviously, like you said, we felt like we made it a little closer than it had to be. It's a great team over there. They got great players. They played well game today. So we stuck it out. We got the win. It obviously feels good to win.
I did my best holding off to talk about the Jalen Hurts, Carson Wentz thing. I know a lot of people wanted to talk about that right out of the gate, wanted to be the first thing they wanted to talk about there. But there are obviously big stories in the NFL yesterday. And I've been a Kyler Murray backer all year. I hold a bunch of futures tickets on him to win Offensive Player of the Year, and I have his passing overs and all that good stuff. In fact, I'll check live where Kyler is at on his passing total. He's not there yet. I need like another 130 yards for him to get there. But the real story, obviously, on the Eagles side is Jalen Hurts plays well again, 24 of 44, 338 and 3 touchdowns, putting up Justin Herbert-like numbers. He also runs the ball for 11 carries for 63 yards and a touchdown. And that was toe-to-toe with Kyler. That was, for me, the most fun I had watching a game yesterday. They were going at it, and that thing was up in the air. Kyler, on the flip side, he goes 406 and 3 touchdowns. He threw a pick, but he also ran the ball 8 times for 29 yards and a touchdown. We saw that early on. He was able to get out there a little bit. He hadn't been running the ball. Obviously, the issue with his shoulder was preventing them from calling some running plays, but good to see Kyler get back in the mix, and they're an 8-6 team right now. They're still in the mix for a playoff spot. I give them a lot of credit for being able to battle back. They hadn't played well for a bunch of weeks. I don't know if you consider that them playing well yesterday, but they gutted out a win, and they dominated the Giants the week before. So they had slid to 6-6. They win two in a row, and I'll get their schedule for you right now. Their next two games, they host the Niners, who are used to playing in Arizona, and then they have the Rams. So divisional games here for them. Niners officially eliminated from playoff contention yesterday by the Cowboys, but that's where the Cardinals sit. Now, the Eagles. Everybody's got an opinion on it, so I have to weigh in with mine. Carson Wentz is going to be on the team next year. They're not going to trade him. It is going to be a tough quarterback room. And I was listening to Dan Orlovsky talking earlier today. And he said that he, through the course of his career, had been in great quarterback rooms. But this scenario might create a lot of tension, because Wentz is the guy being paid all the money to be the starting quarterback, and he's not playing right now. And if 9 months from now, let's say Hurts plays like this again for the next two games, and Hurts goes out, goes into camp, and he's the backup, he's going to say, why would I ever be a backup if I prove to everyone for a month on the field that I'm a starting caliber NFL quarterback? It might be a good problem to have in some ways if you're an Eagles fan, but it's a problem, because one guy's too expensive to keep around as a backup and the other one is too good to keep on the bench. So I'm of the opinion that at this moment, regardless of how Hurts is playing, I think Wentz will be back in there starting. I think he needs to get his head right. I think they need to fix the offensive line, but it's damning to him that the offensive line that I've been saying has been so bad. And I've been a little, the irony for me on Wentz this season is I've been a little bit easier on him, but I was never on the bandwagon. I never bought in. I understand that he played great for that one season and he was on his way to winning an MVP, but so was Derek Carr one year. I don't think much of him. And Derek Carr's actually been good this year too. But I never was all in on Wentz. I didn't think he was an elite QB in the way that they talk about other people. Will Hurts ever be? I don't know. But right now, he played better this year than Carson Wentz did at any point. And it's two games, and he already looks better. So I don't know what they can do. Would you move on from Hurts now? No. You could probably get something for him. You probably get a good asset for him. Hell, the Steelers would probably trade for him. But you're not going to want to do that when you know you have an asset that can play like that, to trade him when he's cheap. That's a tough deal. But I think Wentz is on this team next year. And I think it's a straight. I think Wentz will be the quarterback in week one. But if things progress like this during the preseason and OTAs and everything in the offseason, then I think they really have to consider just leaving Wentz on the bench. It'll be the most expensive backup QB of all time. If the financial ramifications of cutting him just wouldn't make sense. But I could be wrong. Maybe they work out a different scenario. But from everything I've seen and read, I don't see how it's even possible. It would be a $57 million dead cap hit, and there's no way to get out of it. Similarly, people have said this about, well, why don't the Jets just pick up somebody like Matt Ryan or Matt Stafford? Matt Ryan will be on the Falcons next year. That's not a possibility for them to cut him. So I think there are veteran options out there. Matt Stafford is a possibility that's a little bit more flexible. But we're going to come back with my guy Joe Lisi to talk college football and the rankings and everything else after this on The Grid.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Back on the grid, Mike Blewett. You can find me on Twitter at Mike Blewett. Follow us all on Sports Grid. I'm filling in for Scott Farrell tonight. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And I'll be on tomorrow night as well. I'll be in a better mood tomorrow night, hopefully. But I'm a little bit in shock. And I'm going to bring in my buddy, Joe Lisi. You find him on Twitter at GoForTheTwo. And on the grid every Saturday and Sunday on College Football Today with me on In Game Live with Scott Wetzel and Gabe Morenci. Lisi, I don't even know what to say. I'm stuck.
I could say
it was the worst first half of football maybe I've seen any team play all year.
Well, let me just say this. You know, Ben Rottenberger, not Roethlisberger, Rottenberger, because 19 total passing yards. I mean, back-to-back terrible primetime performances, Mike. I mean, I don't know. I asked Dr. Chow on Sunday. I said, are there any residual effects about that surgery as the season wears on in terms of, you know, can he be losing arm strength? He said no. But if you just watch him, the ball's coming out. It's fluttering. It's not straight. There's no zip on the passes. Now, granted, I understand there's some injuries, and the rushing game isn't going, but, I mean, that was just terrible. Against a 2-10 team, we talk about Zach Taylor not even being able to coach in the NFL. It's amazing. And somehow Ryan Finley channeled Russell Wilson's days back in Raleigh and gets the win tonight. Unbelievable.
I've said this a number of times. I said it on this show earlier. There's no reason to think anything else other than he can't do it. They're in practice with him every day, and they don't throw the ball downfield. You have all these defenders on whatever team now, and they get paid too. Like I was just saying, a mafia, they get paid too. They can just sit on these short routes and take them away. Juju Smith-Schuster can't do anything, and it's not his fault.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, the one game for me where he looked sharp was when they played the Eagles, right? Where Claypool had four touchdowns. They were challenging Philly's defense vertically. Claypool, I haven't seen that since. And, you know, we talked off air about, you know, James Washington. He missed that throw against Buffalo. I mean, that was an underthrown ball that got an interception. 100%. Washington had about 5 yards on the defender. And they have speedy receivers. It's amazing.
Yes.
It really is.
That's what bothers me. Between Washington and Claypool and Smith-Schuster, it's not like they can't attack teams down the field. They have the skill sets to do it, and they can't, or they don't. And I think the reasons are obvious. I mean, he is coming off major elbow surgery, and I've said, is it possible that he needs another year to come back, I guess, but he's going to be 38 years old. Like, next year's last year. I think they're moving on, and unfortunately, later in the season, it's not working out for him. So let's transition over to college football. I'm going to read this to you. It's from The Athletic earlier today. Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Oklahoma have combined to take 20 out of 28 possible spots since the playoff began in 2014. If Clemson and Alabama end up meeting in the national championship, it would be their fifth playoff meeting in the last 6 years. Is this lack of balance hurting the sport?
I don't think it is. I mean, granted, I know it's a dominant, top-heavy type of situation with the top four, top six type of teams, but you know, Clemson back in 2008 and 2009, about 10 years ago, was just a middle-of-the-road team until Dabo Sweeney built them into a perennial power. So, you know, it is what it is right now. But I posed this question on In Game Live to Scott Wetzel. I said, I understand the college football, you know, fans, some of them are upset that we're going to see Ohio State and Clemson, and we might see, you know, Clemson and Alabama again. I get that. But why is it that we're not upset when we watch Brady and Breeze play for 10 straight years, or Peyton and Brady, and Roethlisberger and Breeze, or we don't get tired of those matchups? Why? I mean, they're great games, right? I mean, it's the same thing on the NFL. The difference in college is that at least it's the same teams, but we have different transitional players and positional players every single year. You know, we had Tua. Now it's Trevor Lawrence. Now it's Mac Jones.
Well, that's what's fun about college football, right? You get to see a lot of different styles of play, and you see a lot of different players. I would submit that people were very sick of the Patriots for a variety of reasons, but people were very sick of the Patriots. And in general, yes, for a while there in the AFC, only three quarterbacks had made the Super Bowl in the AFC for like a 15-year stretch: Brady, Roethlisberger, and Peyton Manning. So there was a very long stretch there of only those three teams getting there. It was like a 10 to 12 year stretch, maybe longer. Joe Flacco broke that up. But there were still, we see a wide variety of teams at least get into the tournament in the NFL. The Bills broke their streak a couple of years ago. They hadn't made the playoffs in 18 years, but that was a rarity. We see even bad teams, like the Bengals are a bad team now, despite what just happened and then beating my Steelers, but they were in the playoffs a bunch of years. The Jets have been bad for a decade, and the Jaguars have, but the Jags made the playoffs a few years ago in the AFC Championship game. The Jets made the AFC Championship game twice in the previous decade. So I think there are at least opportunities for teams to build themselves up. You and I have talked on college football today, Joe, about how there really aren't a lot of teams that can compete, and it's feeling even tighter after the way the end of this season played out.
It really is. You know, it used to be like Notre Dame used to have the stranglehold on the recruiting aspect for the most part because of the national TV contract with NBC. It's not that the case anymore. And now you have Alabama, you have Clemson, you have Ohio State, and you have Oklahoma in the Big 12. You know, until teams can recruit a polarizing coach that can get both sides in terms of athletes, offensively and defensively, an Urban Meyer type of coach, you know, it's not going to change because kids want to go to a winner. And when they, you know, when they have an opportunity to play in the NFL, they're going to go to that type of program. Now, you know, a team that's always on the cusp is like a team like LSU. Just think about the NFL talent that has gone to the NFL, you know, over the last few years, just at the defensive back position. Matthew, Honey Badger, right? Patrick Peterson. You know, the list, it goes on and on. And now it's the wide receiver position for LSU. But, you know, they're a one-hit wonder. They won last year and couldn't rebuild with all the attrition that they had. But teams like Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State can, because they just get the top five athletes at every position because the kids want to go there and they build it. It's unfortunate, but they're getting the offense and defense alignment. That's where the transition is and the dominance is out of the top five or six teams. That's why Oklahoma hasn't been able to win a playoff game, because when push comes to shove, defense wins championships. And even though you might give up a ton of points, when you need a stop, the physicality is there for teams like Clemson and Alabama.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. So let's just focus on the teams that are going to be in. Well, first of all, did you think it was going to be Notre Dame, A, and B, did you feel like they deserved to be there? I thought after their performance against Clemson, I thought they might put Texas A&M in, but I don't really have a problem considering the way that they judge it.
Yeah, I after watching that game, I thought that there was a possibility that definitely Notre Dame would not be in. But I never thought that it would be Texas A&M. I just never thought that. I thought if anything, there was the outside chance of Oklahoma cracking in. because they were playing the way, you know, they're playing probably as good as anybody in the nation, even on the defensive side of the ball. We talked about it on College Football Today, entering that game against Iowa State. They were only giving up over the last three games 66 rushing yards per game. So I thought that possibly Oklahoma would crack. The reason why I never thought A&M would is they're not a conference champ, and they have one loss, and it was to Alabama. So the committee can't, you know, sitting there saying, we're going to put in Texas A&M when we have Oklahoma, we have Cincinnati as conference champions. Can't do that.
But doesn't know.
You know, that was that.
Doesn't Notre Dame really? Up. Notre Dame and A&M really do have a similar resume. Notre Dame does have the win over Clemson. Obviously, that is really the difference maker. But you would argue that Clemson was not at full strength, right? They didn't have their starting quarterback, their starting middle linebacker, and team leader. You could poke holes in that Notre Dame win over Clemson, but I guess that's the difference. I don't really have that big of an issue. So, all right, you and I are going to get a chance to talk about these things at length. It's an Alabama-Clemson collision course. If those two teams played tonight, who would you pick to win it?
You know, I would give, you know, if they played tonight, I would go with Trevor Lawrence, you know, and Dabo Sweeney. And you know, one of the concerns for Alabama in the playoffs is their centers out. And that's a huge, huge concern moving forward. It might not hurt them against Notre Dame, but it could definitely hurt them against, you know, Clemson or Ohio State.
All right, good stuff. That's my buddy Joe Lisi. You find him on Twitter at GoForTheTwo. He's with me every Saturday morning on College Football Today and in-game live all weekend. Joe, happy holidays. I'll talk to you in a few days, buddy. And we'll be back with more for On the Bench. It's Mike Blewett filling in tonight.
Your search is over.
You found it.
What you've been looking for.
The definitive culmination of the state of the art of sports talk.
This is The Winning Edge. You're listening to the Sports Grid Radio Network.
I'm in shock. Still in shock. I don't know how this happened. Steelers lost to the Bengals. They're now lost three in a row, 11-0 team. Now 11-3. So I'm going to try and move on from that. Maybe I'll give you my final thoughts on it in the final 3 minutes. But we've got one big segment here for everybody listening and watching. And I wanted to wrap up what we were talking about with Joe Lisi there with college football and get a little bit of perspective from the teams that are going to be involved in it. And obviously the committee chair, Gary Barta. So they selected their top four. We know it's number one, Alabama, number two, Clemson, number three, Ohio State, number four, Notre Dame. See how Gary Barta and the playoff committee got to this conclusion.
For the last spot, you had Notre Dame four, Texas A&M five. Both teams, one-loss teams with decisive losses at the hands of the teams that you have one and two. What gave the Fighting Irish the edge over the Aggies?
Well, you painted the picture of two teams that have really similar resumes. They've played similar schedules. Coming into this weekend, Notre Dame was undefeated. They had beaten the number two team now in Clemson and on the road against the number 13 team in North Carolina. And Texas A&M's top win was against a very good Florida team. So very similar resumes. But in the end, the committee felt like Notre Dame had earned its way there based on the complete analysis of the resume. And that probably came down to having an additional win against a ranked team.
Okay. Look, I'm fine with that explanation, but it's all just sort of noise at this point, isn't it? They just were going to pick who they were going to pick. Joe Lisi and I have been doing college football shows since May. And we said this season is about three teams. It's really about two teams. But it was about three teams, and let's find the fourth one. Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State were locks in this thing. And they put Ohio State in there after they played six games. So they had three locks in there. And who was the fourth? And we kicked this around months ago. We said, maybe Notre Dame, maybe Oklahoma. I probably wouldn't have said A&M back then. But good season for them. We talked about Florida. And we mentioned Cincinnati, but never seriously. We thought maybe could Georgia get in the mix? That was another team. They had kind of a disappointing season, but they went 7-2. It's not like they were terrible. They got blown out by Alabama. Everybody gets blown out by Alabama, except Florida, actually. Florida, like a lot of people said online, just throw Florida back in there. At least they'll give Bama a game, but who wants to see that again? Florida lost their opportunity. If Florida had not lost to A&M or had not lost to LSU, there was a chance. The LSU loss was obviously a killer, but there was a chance they would have gone off script and put a two-loss team in there just for the competitiveness of it and losing in an SEC championship game to the best team in the country. That was a great game. That was not the blowout that some people, Alabama took their foot off the gas. It wasn't that. I thought Florida was trading haymakers with Alabama, and they outscored them in the second half. I thought it was a really good game. In any event, that's it. I don't really care what the committee says. We knew they were going to do something like this. And they just kind of put in who they felt like putting in. Like Lisa even just said, maybe I could see Oklahoma have gotten in there. Can you imagine if Oklahoma jumped all those spots over all those teams, including over an undefeated Cincinnati team, and just got in there because they like them? Because they're playing well right now. Like, well, what happened when they opened the season with losses to Kansas State and Iowa State? That's nobody's problem but their own. I don't want to hear about it when teams have two losses. If a bunch of teams have two losses, we can talk. But I don't really want to hear about it. Oh, they're playing so much better now. All right. Well, that's not how I judge the season. You played all 10 games. I saw it. You lost two of them. So good luck next year. Fine. You're in. I read it before. 20 of the 28 spots are with five teams. I will say this honestly. It's easy to say now because hindsight is 20/20. But I honestly thought at the inception of the college football playoff that it was not going to be good for anybody else but the elite teams. And that has actually proven to be the case. It's probably the prediction that I should have talked about more. I never really thought the college football playoff, the BCS system, for all the flaws it had in it, it actually got it right most of the time, almost all of the time. There were rare instances where we didn't have the two best teams playing. Or there was a team that got shut out. It's always somebody that's going to get shut out in these rankings. You go back to college football in the 60s and 70s, there was a year with five undefeated teams, and people just didn't get a chance to play in some of the big bowls because there were too many undefeated teams. I think we've gotten to a point where everybody wants the 8-team playoff. They weren't just going to do it this year or put it together this year, certainly not this year, but we'll see. I don't know if they really have an appetite. I actually don't think they want teams like Cincinnati in it. I don't. I think that's why they're holding off. There's enough momentum now that if the ratings look bad for these games, they're really going to have to think about it. They've screwed up the bowls in a variety of different ways in terms of air times or whatever that have murdered their ratings, showing them on New Year's Eve. But I'll say, I really don't think that they want those teams in there. I think they're cool with four. Maybe they'd expand it to six and like have a play-in or some weird deal like that. But to put themselves in a position where they have to include a Cincinnati or a UCF or a Tulsa or somebody like that, or Coastal Carolina, I actually don't think they're interested. I don't think they want those teams playing for national championships. I honestly believe that. They're about the Power Five teams, and hell, my alma mater is a Power Five team, and I bet the committee has no interest in Boston College. None. I really feel that way. The only way that BC would ever get in would be to win the whole thing. They'd have to have an undefeated season and win the ACC. I don't even think they would get in as a one-loss ACC champ if they beat Clemson during the regular season. You know, if their one loss, hypothetically, was to Clemson in the regular season, and then Clemson somehow lost two games in that season. I'm coming up with an impossible scenario, but hear me out. And BC then won the ACC championship by beating Virginia Tech on the other side, and they were 12-13-1. I think they'd shut them out because they're not Oklahoma and they're not Ohio State or Notre Dame Independent or Alabama. I really think that. I think they are cool with their 6 or 8 or 10 teams that are part of the elite, which are the four teams that are in now: Oklahoma, Florida, Georgia, Texas. They didn't want A&M in there. That's about it. USC. When USC is right, they'll mess with USC. And I guess they don't really want Oregon or any of those other teams. But that's how I feel. I've felt that way for some time, and I'm saying it on air. It's a bummer because I love college football, but I actually think the committee doesn't really want to mess with a lot of teams. We'll see. If they step up and they put an 18 playoff in and they invite teams like Coastal and Cincinnati. We'll see. And I think there's some fans out there that aren't that interested either in seeing those teams. So, all right, Jimbo Fisher was really adamant about Texas A&M being in. And I want you to listen to this sound because he's complimentary of the committee, which is an odd place to be on a day like today for him.
Oh, I mean, listen, you got great people on who do a great job. Hey, you can complain about every selection that's made. It's like, all right, who complains about every call I make? Well, we should have ran the ball. We should have thrown the ball. We should have done this. We should have done that. We should. I mean, that's life. I mean, I have no. Those people do a great job. They spend all year doing it. They gather the information. They do one heck of a job, and they came to conclusion and did it. I wouldn't change anything.
It's a weird thing for him to say. I think he would change something, but I actually agree with his assessment. Even me as a fan and as somebody that follows the sport and broadcasts and talks about it and analyzes it. The other night after watching Notre Dame, I was like, they shouldn't be in this. Just throw Texas A&M in. And then I had a day to think about it. And even before I heard the rankings, I was like, you know what? If Notre Dame was in, I'd be okay with it. I can't really be critical of that. I would have had a problem with Oklahoma or Florida. I obviously would have liked to have seen Cincinnati, but we knew 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, that was never going to happen. And people entertaining it were just kidding themselves. People getting really fired up over what the committee does and doesn't do. Just pay attention to what they're telling you. They were screaming from the rooftops that they didn't want Cincinnati and Coastal in through their actions, and that they were going to find a way to put somebody else in. And it's Notre Dame. Notre Dame had a great season. I can't really take a lot of credit away. And I know people want to see them get pounded by Alabama. So, and they'll think that that's it once and for all. They won't put Notre Dame in again. I don't think that's true. I think they'll put them in again because a lot of people watch Notre Dame. And if they rip off 10-1 seasons, they'll just be back right in there again. So one note that's important in college football is Army. Army was set to be shut out. Because we've obviously lost 11 bowl games, I think, potentially another. West Virginia was set to play Tennessee. Tennessee now has COVID issues. I think you heard Dan Stratford talk about this at the top of the hour. But Army is in. They'll be in the Liberty Bowl against West Virginia. So kudos to the Knights. I'm happy for them. Seen games at Army. Great venue. I thought it was cool that they played Navy on campus. It hadn't happened since 1943 in the fog and everything else, but a 9-2 Army team, well deserved getting to see a bowl game. I think these bowl games are going to be different. I think they're going to be weird. We already know about the Rose Bowl moving venues, which makes sense in a pandemic to make two teams travel thousands of miles to play in front of no one, including their own families. Didn't make a lot of sense. So I appreciate the flexibility from the Rose Bowl, even though you knew they didn't want to do it. I also thought that of all the scenes that are iconic in college football, that overhead shot of the sun going down on the Rose Bowl is a big deal with all the fans. You see the two different fan bases and their colors surrounding the bowl. It's always a cool scene and something I love to watch on New Year's Day. And if that had been empty, it would have been odd. So now it's going to be odd because it'll be an AT&T stadium and we'll see what happens. So despite everything I just said, I am excited to watch the games and I'll be tuned in and I'll be wagering on them and everything else. In fact, I'm going to give you the odds right now on those two games. And we've got all the playoffs. Here we go. Let's go. Notre Dame, 19.5 point dogs to Alabama, and Ohio State, 7.5 point dogs to Clemson. That seems about right. I think it's hard to put a good spread on Ohio State, if only because we've only seen them play six times and we've seen them play some sloppy games. If Ohio State played their best game and they had all of their personnel, could they beat anybody? Maybe. We just don't really know. I think ultimately they're a well-coached team. I think all these teams are really well-coached. The four best, you could argue these are four of the best coaches in the entire country, maybe the four best in the entire country, even though some people aren't going to give Ryan Day credit because it was Urban Meyer's program, and people don't think much of Brian Kelly because they don't think much of him. But nonetheless, that's where we're at right now. Three touchdown and a touchdown favorite in those two games. I will be watching. I will be analyzing. I will be wagering on them. Both totals in the mid-60s. So I'm going to close out this show next. It's been a fun couple of hours here. And I will be here tomorrow. I promise I'll talk more basketball tomorrow. But I'll be back after this to close out hour number two of Pharrell on the Bench right here on The Grid. All right. Closing it out here on The Grid. Thank you for everybody for listening. I'm stepping in here for Scott tonight, Pharrell on the Bench. I'm coming off the bench. Mike Blewett, again, follow me on Twitter at Mike Blewett. I'll be here tomorrow. I promise I'll talk more basketball. We're tipping off the NBA season. We've got a little Warriors Nets. Excited about that. We'll talk college football bowl week. It's kicked off today, but the game was in the middle of the afternoon. I didn't even get a chance to watch that one. I'm going to focus tomorrow on the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. That's Tulane, Nevada. App State beat North Texas today, 56-28. We also have tomorrow the roofclaim.com Boca Raton Bowl. That's UCF versus BYU. That's at 7 o'clock. So that'll be finishing up by the time I get on air. And then we got games on the 23rd and 24th creeping up on Christmas. So excited to be here tomorrow. We'll be talking. I don't even want to do a moratorium on the Steelers, but really just a pathetic effort tonight. It was really all about the first half. They were down 17-0. They couldn't do anything offensively. I went over the possessions again. I'll do it one more time to make myself angry before the show moves on, before we move on to Gabe Morenci. So three and out, fumble, three and out, fumble. Those two fumbles led to 10 points. Interception led to another touchdown. So the three turnovers, 17 points. Punt, punt. So it was 17-0. Bengals scored 10 points in the second half. Their biggest upset loss since 1966. I don't believe it. I believe it. I just watched it. So pathetic stuff there. So thank you to Brian Ciano. He'll be with me again tomorrow night, doing a great job as always, trying to make me look and sound as best as I can. So happy holidays to everybody out there listening. I promise I'll be in a better mood tomorrow, a more joyous, festive, Santa-like mood. I'm going to play some wagers tomorrow. I need some more money in that stocking. So good luck to everybody out there, and happy holidays. Gabe Morenci next, right here on Sports Grid Radio. Talk to you soon.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.